This is GamesAtWork.biz with Michael Martin and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with.
This is episode 262, Dialing for Dollars. Welcome again to another edition of GamesAtWork.biz. This is Michael Martin overlooking a teensy little bit of snow still here in North Carolina, and glad to be joined for some fun here with my friend and co-host, Mr. Michael Rowe. Hey, Michael.
Hey. How you doing?
I'm warm inside, which is a good thing, and no ice around anymore here either. So we had our first snow of the decade, and
probably the last snow of the decade.
And well, hopefully not. But it was nice to see at least a little bit of the.
Which means I lost my bet. I lost my bet.
Did you have a
given
bet?
How screwy this winter was, I was expecting our first snow would be in April.
Gosh, I would have taken that bet, or against that bet, maybe.
Yes,
but what if you were betting on trade shows? You know, we were talking a little bit about this in our last episode about whether or not going to trade shows is still the appropriate thing, and there have been other podcasts that have talked about similar subjects in the last week and a half or so, especially after Mobile World Congress. And this TechCrunch article that you found is like, yep, that's the starting point, and maybe it's going to be a tipping point. What do you think?
Yeah, and I was surprised it took TechCrunch a whole week before they wrote this article. given that we recorded early last week and we said, you know, this might not happen. Everything's looking like Mobile World Congress was not going to happen. They would probably fold, and they did shortly after we finished our edit. Yeah. So, hey, prognostication?
Maybe.
But yeah, it's a very, you know, common article to be expected. The real thing is, and we talked about this a little bit last week and just wanted to kind of carry it through to this week now that the event was canceled, is the experience that is being enabled. And I'm not just talking about the show floor, right? The show floor is a facility to drive meetings, right? Big shows like Mobile World Congress and CES and RSA and Think and Salesforce's one. Anyway, all these big shows.
Dreamforce or something like that.
Dreamforce. They're designed for a couple of things. One is for keynotes to introduce concepts, ideas, and thoughts to a large, broad audience and hopefully get picked up by the media for the industry or the group that you're targeting. So you get buzz.
Right.
The second is a lot of enablement for your partners, for your sellers, self-enablement by buyers, if it's like CES, to get deep hands-on knowledge about a product. And the third, and probably the most important aspect of these shows, is the meetings that occur between businesses and other businesses, or businesses and individuals or investors, etc. And each of these events or these things have now been enabled through technology to happen while very far away in a very, I almost want to use the term visceral way, right? You know, the fact that there's so many of these very powerful, very good video streaming services for meetings today.
Sure.
The fact that a whole industry has built up around remote education, right? Companies like Coursera, right? All the different things on YouTube, other companies that allow you to learn about a product or an idea or whatever. And the fact that as AR and VR continue to improve and the price points continue to go down, the experiential aspect of seeing something on the show floor is being able to be recreated. The only thing that I believe is not yet fully replaceable is the serendipitous meetings that occur when you walk by and see something, right? Or where you've gone to the dinner, right?
Yeah.
At the club, at the event place, or the bar or whatever, and you bump into somebody and they're wearing a shirt or a badge from one of the other companies that you just kind of want to talk to if you happen to run into them. Now, some of that happens today, though, on platforms like Twitter, like LinkedIn, right? Where because of a connection to a connection, you see and you can interact. So I think we're really, really close to where this is not an if but a when, and not a, you know, it's 80% good enough, but it is replaceable.
So
what do you think?
I'm giggling, and the reason why I was giggling is I'd written down on my sticky note serendipitous. So
yes,
I tend to agree with your assessment to a point, and where I think I diverge a little bit is serendipity is such an amazing thing, manifesting into reality something that you want and to see and have happen has an awful lot of the physicality around it. Positioning yourself in the right place, the concept of just showing up, being aware of your surroundings and understanding what is happening around you. Sure, you can do those things in a text-based, you know, Twitter or LinkedIn type of environment. You can be tuned in and have your Google alerts kind of alert you and show you things that you're trying to watch out for. But, you know, part of all these kind of events are you got to get in line for things. You got to get in line to get into the building. You got to get in line to get into the keynote. You got to get in line to get something to eat. And in many of those spaces and places, that's where the mix master kind of thing happens. And you're dealing with so many randoms that you might find yourself right in front of the absolute person that you're supposed to meet, but you weren't sure that you were supposed to. And there's a balancing out of that you can get when you're doing things digitally. So that's the first angle. And the second angle is that you and I have both, you know, been around all these virtual places and spaces for a long time. And we know that we get maximum benefit out of that when the virtual is combined first, usually with some physical, because when you have met somebody in person, you had a chance to shake their hand or see them, that being able to visualize and being able to interact with them later through a virtual environment is that much more powerful. You don't need to be physically in the same place all the time. You can meet, and then that benefit cascades and carries forward over time that then needs, you know, every once in a while, another physical meeting, another sharing of a meal, another, you know, having a drink together, something like that, to get you where you need to go. So that's sort of my take on it, Michael. I like a lot of what you just said, but I think we will not be in a spot that we can replace everything with a digital environment anyway.
Well, I would disagree with one point you made.
Yeah, go for it.
And that is that the virtual environments were more productive when you knew the person in advance. And let me give you an example. Our good friend Epred,
yep,
and our good friend Andy Piper, we both met them first in the virtual environment and built up a relationship before we met them in person. I would say there is an opportunity in both directions.
Yeah. Okay. I'll grant you that. And with those two specific individuals, you bet. But it takes a very special digital native kind of thing for that to happen. And shoot, maybe that's we're evolving there, right?
Well, I'll give you another example. Our original first co-host of the three on Dog Ear Nation was Matt Simpson.
Yep.
And I know I didn't meet him first before we started doing a podcast for some time.
Yeah. Like I said, I can grant you that. Maybe I put cart and horse a little bit, you know, before one another. But the perspective I have is that there are important reasons to being in person periodically. First
Agreed.
Or
Agreed.
Third or, you know, and that can trail over time. I mean, the last time I saw Epred or Ian or Andy in person has been actually, you know, quite a while ago. But I still feel like I've got that sort of loose, tight relationship. I kind of know what's happening with each of them, even though I'm not talking to them frequently. So that's good. And I'm happy that I have that kind of a connection with them and a whole range of other people too. Challenges, you know, how do you manage that across a really, really, really broad set of people? That's tricky, right?
Yeah.
That's tricky. And where sometimes the randomness of it all kind of comes together. So, hey,
yeah. And my point was the randomness of things like Twitter, right? Or things that allow that serendipitous run in could start the relationship that then you strengthen with face to face.
Yeah.
Right. So I think we violently agree that it's not 100%.
Yeah.
The question on whether it's, you know, 90, 95, 97 is where the nuance arises.
Yeah, it is. And I'm, you know, I think there's a degree of I can announce things and I can announce them virtually and I can announce them on video and I can announce them in a virtual world. But, you know, for something like a HoloLens, so to speak, if you haven't experienced one before, it's going to be really difficult to just glance at a screen or, you know, get an idea of what it might be like if you didn't have a chance to feel what it might be like.
Well, aren't there some people who are starting to use it recently?
Yeah, that's where I was going to go. Speaking of faces,
I can tell. Because we've met each other face to face before.
Yeah.
And I kind of can know when you're doing a transition.
Yeah, that's sort of where we're heading. So we have an example here of the U.S. Army, who, according to the Popular Mechanics article, is going to be buying 40,000 pairs of the HoloLens goggles. They call them IVAS, and I remember writing down what that said at some point. The Integrated Visual Augmentation System, IVAS, HoloLens 2.
It's a ETLA.
Yes, extended ETLA. And it's allowing the user to be hands-free, so to speak, and have the detail around you be conveyed by looking at it. So use case, naturally, for mixed reality, more augmented reality as opposed to unaugmented reality. You certainly don't want virtual reality goggles on warfighters in the field, because that might actually be detrimental to them. I found it as an interesting article, yet another proof point of something that is getting beyond the let's try it out and kick the tires, so to speak, and let's actually use it.
Yeah, this is an interesting article, and I'm sure people are familiar with the term, what is it? And I'm going to mess up the term now, but being out in front of your skis.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So when I saw this, I was like, oh, this is interesting. I could definitely see this in a POC in a friendly environment. But having played with HoloLens like you have, I cannot see these as they exist today being ruggedized enough to survive any usage in theater, as they say, right? Out in a deployed situation.
Well, yeah, Yeah, and it's hard for me to see that too. I could imagine them integrated in with a helmet.
Yep.
I could see where that might come.
Like the motorcycle helmet that we've been talking about for a couple of years.
Yep, exactly. Or I could see them, you know, for more recon type of activity. And the picture at the bottom of the article where it looks like there's a battery pack or some sort of, you know, transmission connection to a phone or some other service that would allow data to pass back and forth between them. That's where I could see some of the benefit being there, as well as I'm sure the cameras and the HoloLens being able to transmit information back to some sort of central command. So you can see what individual people are seeing in the field too.
Yeah.
And doing some interesting, you know, visual recognition and being able to say, oh, okay, here's what this and what this and what this is. So now I can have a troop, you know, or a platoon be better deployed because I can essentially see around the corner because I can see what everybody is seeing at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So interesting stuff.
Yeah. And I mean, we've talked these use cases to death, I think, over the years. And I think they all make sense. So, again, I think this is a really good POC. 40,000.
Yep. 40, seems like a lot. Beyond a POC.
But
don't you think, though?
How many members are there of the military?
Yeah, still 40,000 is not like
at best it's a 10% deployment.
Oh, I don't know about that. These devices are what? Are they $500 a piece?
I'm sure at this scale they're probably a little bit cheaper.
Yeah, maybe so, because $500 would be 20 million. So that'd be a little bit more than the proof of concept.
No, I've done some projects with the military. I think this is a small scale, maybe POC is the wrong term, but this is not full deployment in any shape or fashion. I think it's an in-field test. And as I said, I'm concerned about ruggedness to see what comes out. But they do talk about a final product coming later. Maybe they're working with them to harden it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and the notion of having the integration between the goggles and the weapons, you can imagine now a situation where you could have the weapon held at your hip or held somewhere else other than in front of your face and being able to aim it appropriately, or have the computer guided system help with haptics guide where you're aiming what you need to do. So there's some interesting aspects of this that, yeah, it's not full deployment. I don't think anyone was saying that, but it's still quite a big deal. All right. So
very cool.
We switch Rooney's over to something also that's super interesting. Both of us found this, incidentally. So I guess it's showing a little bit of a mind meld going on here too between us. How many calls do you get on a day or a week, you know, from somebody who you just don't want to talk to because they're trying to sell you something or convince you that your car is about to go out of warranty or something crazy like that? Do you get those calls?
All of them. What's really interesting, we actually talked about this guy who does the do not pay a couple of years ago.
Years ago, yeah.
I've actually got it on my phone.
Do you?
I've actually used a couple of the services. So what was more interesting to me on this one is the business model, mm-hmm. Which I haven't figured out yet. It's not really talked about yet in the article in any meaningful shape, form, or fashion.
Yep.
I was also thinking of, you know, my next job after I retire one day would be to use this. Given the number of calls I get on a daily basis, I could make a pretty good living at $3,000 a call.
Well, I could see that too. So I hadn't delved deeply into the way that this operates. But, you know, my typical reaction when I get a robocall is I just don't answer. Right.
And if you're not in my phone book, it ain't getting answered. Period.
Yeah, exactly.
It's that simple.
If I don't recognize the phone number, I'm not answering the call.
You haven't turned on don't ring if you're not in my phone book?
Apparently not.
Yeah, that was a new feature added in iOS 13.
Huh.
And basically, if you're not in my phone book, you go to voicemail. It doesn't even ring.
That is wacky. So yeah. that's in settings and probably in the phone, I'm guessing, right?
More exciting podcasting.
Oh, my goodness.
Let's just go through the settings on the Mac.
On the iOS device. Change voicemail password. Well, I will have to look at this here. Obviously, it's not showing up super easy. But what was interesting about this article, though, was that it said do not pay issues a credit card. So it looks a burner credit card is what they say. Yep. So what they do,
it's a one-time use burner credit card so that they can track back.
Right. So I guess from reading this is that do not pay call answers the call, provides the credit card to whatever the company is that's calling mm-hmm. you. Yep. And then that now provides contact information that do not pay can go back after them and say, you know what? I was on the do not call registry and you called me and I have proof of that call and that you tried to charge me, which I've declined on the credit card. So now you owe me $3,000.
Yep.
Is that your take too? Is that what you understand this to be?
Well, actually, it's a little bit more complex than that. They provide you with the details in the process so that you can then do the legal action at up to $3,000 a call, according to current law in U.S.
Wow.
So it's not fully automated. If it was fully automated, I would turn it on right now. So from what I can tell, you actually have to answer the call.
I see.
Provide them with that credit card. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then that will then allow Do Not Call to trace the actual business entity that's trying to process the financial transaction, which then gets a real contact that you can then sue.
That's pretty cool. That is super cool. In fact, what I remember from other situations like this, you know, the level of automation that's possible now where you could do things like if you're delayed sufficiently on a flight in the European Union, you're entitled to compensation.
Well, that's part of Do Not Call. Yeah, that's what they've done. The number of people who have trip insurance who never claim it.
Yep.
It will automate that for you.
Yeah.
That's the same guy. Same company. That's
well. Do not pay. Yeah, which is not a do not pay. I mean, didn't he
did
have
I say
another
do not
one?
Paul?
It's you
do
said
not pay,
do not
sorry.
Pay. Yeah,
it's do not pay.
Because there's other ones like this too about what was it? Challenging traffic tickets and stuff like that, right?
Also, do not pay.
Yeah,
it's the same guy.
Have you used all these services from this guy or not?
I've played with it a little bit. Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
I haven't made any money yet.
Well, Robo Revenge. This is awesome stuff.
Yeah.
So what if though, instead of, you know, these kind of fun calling kind of things, you decided to get all vintage on it? And the vintage
how
example.
Vintage?
How vintage? apparently, with a mere $240, you can create a rotary cell phone. So forget these flip phones like we've been talking about. Forget
those
the $2,000 phones and so on. You could take a Western Electric trimline phones dialer, you know, like a rotary dialer, which maybe for some of our listening audience, they have no idea what we're talking about. So you need to look at the picture here. This is where you would put your finger in the dialer and you'd move it around the dial and then you'd let it go and it would go.
And it would go clickety 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 click. And those number of clicks was how it figured out in the exchange on the phone circuit which number you dialed.
Yeah. So you can create a phone that actually will let you dial numbers like people used to dial numbers. That was the dialing part because it was a circular thing. It's almost.
Can you imagine texting with that?
Yeah. Oh, that's just, you know, entirely too much fun. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. So the amount of money, first of all, to build this, I think is a little on the insane side, but that's okay. What I thought was super funny though, Michael, is that this particular kit and how to build a phone that does this sort of thing actually has buttons for speed dial. And I thought to myself, okay.
I wonder if it actually moves the rotary at that point.
I don't think it does. I think if you decide to hit a speed dial button on here, you're telling it that forget dialing, just call, you know, my mom.
I think it would be funny if it just started spinning the rotary faster.
Yeah, that would be kind of fun. So if you would like to create a similar phone, I suppose you can go ahead and do this because that's the deal. So
I like it.
So last thing that we've got for this week, and no, a little bit of a short show, but there were some fun things all the way around, is the Tesla anti-handbook. So there was a couple of articles, and this came through your feed too, Michael, didn't it, this week?
Yeah, I got the articles. You actually pulled the scribed link.
Yeah, so the scribed link is here. So you can check this out for yourself. Someone had uploaded the Tesla employee handbook. And my first inclination was, there's no way this is going to be up here for very long because someone's going to pull it. And then, Michael, you made the point that this is just, you know, awesome PR. Why would Tesla want to pull it?
Yeah.
Right? Because it what it does is it highlights the Tesla culture. And
it
so,
highlights that they think differently.
Differently. Yes. Exactly. So and a number of things here about, you know, basically try not to be silly about what you're going to do, right? Come to work on time, you know, because we're expecting you to be here. And if you can't, what was the phrase here? If you don't show up for work, you're a jerk.
Yes.
I guess they didn't really intend for it to rhyme, but it does.
I think they did.
But it's four pages. It's definitely not legalese. And the subjects of, you know, if you're sick, don't come in and don't make us sick. If safety, you know, safety is kind of important. So please be sure that you need to be safe and take yourself responsible for that. How do you communicate? How do you trust? Actually, the communication one is one that I liked quite a bit,
yes,
which says explicitly, you can talk to anybody in the company, right? And not only that, you don't need anyone's permission to talk to anybody in the company. And in fact, if you are not getting what you believe to be the right answer, the language says you should consider yourself obligated to do so, keep talking, until the right thing happens, which I think is actually a really good piece of advice that should be taken anyway.
Yeah, I wonder how many employees they have and how this scales. So the new factory in China.
Yeah.
Do they use the same handbook?
I would imagine they have it in Chinese.
True. That solves the whole problem. Well, there we have it. They have it in Chinese.
Yeah, well, and they're about to open a new one outside of Berlin, too. So they're working on that.
They just had a legal update that they are allowed to tear down trees to build it.
Exactly, because it's kind of hard to build a factory if the trees are in the middle of your assembly line, right?
Unless you're an elf.
Maybe. So it would be interesting to see the German version of this.
Yes. It would be a lot longer.
Geschwindigkeitsbegrenzung.
I think the Chinese one might be shorter and the German one would be a lot longer.
It could be a lot longer. So anyway, I found it interesting because handbooks and communications are certainly a big part of corporate culture, and seeing how corporations represent themselves, very interesting. And I like I said at the top of this particular one, take it at face value from you, Michael. You're exactly right. There's a lot of reasons why Tesla would have this out here, because this says, all right, you know, if this is the sort of thing you want, come talk to us.
It's kind of a cool agile type, agile. What's the term I'm thinking for? Manifesto type perspective of a handbook.
Yeah.
That's the term.
gosh, you know, funny, you know, it just came up again today. You've seen the Spotify videos, right, on Agile and Agile culture?
Yes.
Yeah.
God, those are old.
I know. Well, that topic came up again for me today, you know, just sort of out of the blue. And I went looking for them in YouTube. I'll include in one of the show notes. I couldn't find the really old ones, but there are some that have been published relatively recently. So I'm going to dig a little harder and see if I can find the original ones. But they're ones that are like 2 years old or something.
Flickr? Flickr was the first really DevOps stuff and Agile. I think it was Flickr on doing A/B testing, you know, 1,000 or 100 different tests and 1,000 deployments, blah, blah, blah.
Well, it was there, but it was also, I remember, oh gosh, who was the guy from the Obama campaign, the first one that did all the A/B testing, like on the email, you know, for what subject lines would get opened.
He was the guy with the dude with the thing and the stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I don't remember his name, but I remember being at a talk where he talked about that level of A/B testing and, you know, from political cycles. And for those of our listening audience in the United States who are getting bombarded right about now with political messages.
You know what's great about
for A/B testing.
You know what's great about the phone switch that I turned on? I don't get those either.
Yes. Well, I love that too. And, you know, the big benefit here is let's make sure that we turn that on for everybody. And thank you for showing me exactly how to do it. I must have skimmed past it before because I hadn't seen that switch. And, like, I'm glad I got it now. Done.
Well, I think puts us at about time.
It does, doesn't it? Serendipitously.
Yes. If only we were in the same location, we could have eyeballed that.
I know. I hear, you know, look, it's right here. That's the sound of the post-it notes flipping. And that adult beverage was brought to you by Adult Beverage.
Adult Beverage, a.k.a. hot tea and honey.
Yes. Well, I hope everybody had fun in the snow here in North Carolina. I hope every one of our listening audience is getting ready to get into the last week of February and about to start March, which will be pretty exciting too. And if you are marching your way towards some interesting artificial intelligence or robotics or AR mixed reality kind of stuff, you know, we would highly suggest that you talk to us, tell us about it, because we'd love to bring it right here and share back with you what we think about it on Games at Work.
Games at Work. Biz.
So until next time, thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the Twitter.
Bye. See ya.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz, or at our website at gamesatwork.biz.